2-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
It's time once again for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Well, we have a strange game to talk about for a second last night. Renes Lias on the hill did not go the Mariners' way. We'll dive into that in just a moment. Franklin Gutierrez back with the ball club. We'll hear from the former Mariners outfielder. Now, once again, a Mariners outfielder. Shannon Dreher caught up with Franklin Gutierrez before the game and his long comeback trail back in the big leagues. Also, one of my favorites today, Scott Lindholm from Beyond the Box Score. We've talked to him many times here on the podcast. I love the way he looks at things and writes about things in Major League Baseball. And today, he's been putting together a series breaking down position by position in the big leagues. And today, we're going to focus on shortstop and third base. Two very different positions in terms of depth right now in Major League Baseball. And I think you'll be surprised when we talked about especially shortstop in terms of the Seattle Mariners. So that comes up in a few minutes as well. He has some good stuff on Felix, so we'll touch on that in just a few minutes. But right now, the game last night, it was such a bizarre start. Of course, Renes Lias coming off of a very good start. In fact, you know, you look at what Lias, Walker, and Montgomery all did in their last turns, it's remarkable. 30-plus strikeouts combined, no walks. Of course, Montgomery coming off the complete game shutout of the Royals the day before. And Lias was cruising along the first three innings, perfect. But then the fourth inning, the wheels loosened, and the wheels came off.
Here's the 3-2, swinging a well-hit ball deep to right field. Trumbo going back to the warning track, looking up, and goodbye, baseball. Mike Moustakas with a home run to right field. Trumbo running out of room. Escobar aboard, and it's 2-0 Kansas City. Mike Moustakas with his seventh home run of the season.
And it kept on going. A seven-inning fourth inning as Lias gets chased in the fourth. Nuno comes on, pitches 3 1/3, only gives up a run, pitches well. But Lias, the knockout blow in the fourth. The Royals go on to win 8-2. Over the M's. Here was Lloyd McLennan after the game trying to explain what happened in the fourth.
Lias perfect for three, and then what happened?
Well, we're still trying to figure that out. I think he was throwing a well of a ball game, and it just fell apart in the fourth inning for him. It seemed like he couldn't get it back together. But lost command. Lost command of the fastball, and the breaking ball was missing. And most of the fastballs he threw were elevated middle of the plate. So, well, I mean, you know, to be truthful with you, you know, the way the game started, I thought he was going to have a tremendous outing tonight. I mean, yeah, real good command of the fastball. The changeup was good. Breaking ball was good. I can't explain that fourth inning. I don't think anybody in the locker room can explain it. He just lost it, you know.
So that was it. Mariners go down. They don't get the series. They had a chance to take a series from the AL West leaders and the AL Central leaders in back-to-back ball games, but didn't happen last night. As the Royals, they take the game and they take the series. So the Mariners look to regroup as they head out onto the road. First, an off day today, and then back to the division, 3 against the Angels for the weekend. We'll talk more about preview coming up in the podcast tomorrow. Also in the game yesterday, Franklin Gutierrez back with the Mariners in the starting lineup and picked up his first base hit of 2015.
Pitch, breaking ball, chopped off the plate. See if Goody can beat it out as it comes down. Duffy tried to shovel, got no play. Throws it wide of Hosmer, and Gutierrez beats it out for a base hit. Welcome back, Goody, with that base hit.
So Franklin Gutierrez back. Shannon Dreher, a chance to catch up with the Mariners outfielder before the ball game.
Franklin Gutierrez is back with the team. He's in the lineup today. And Franklin, I mean, it's been quite a road for you. What was your reaction when you found out that you were being called up?
Well, you know what? In the beginning, I was really nervous because I've been out of baseball for almost 2 years, and it was pretty special when I got the call from Jack early today telling me that I'm going to be here today and I'm going to be in the lineup. So it was a huge accomplishment for me today because I know I've been really been working on really hard down there to trying to get back to the big leagues, and today's the day.
You know, I saw you last year in the middle of the season. You visited the team, and you said, "You know, I'm taking my time now to, you know, feel better and to spend time with my family." What did that time for you do?
It was really hard to be out of baseball for about a year. The only good thing that I can say is I spent really good time with my family. Something that I couldn't do, you know, before and all this year playing baseball. But on the other hand, it was like always thinking and watching baseball, you know, and just being at home, watching TV, watching your teammates play. It was really hard, you know, so I was taking my time to do some treatment for myself, trying to feel better. Obviously, the doctor told me that I'm never going to get to 100% of my health, but I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to be able to play, and I'm going to be able to manage the things that I have. So I decided just to focus in on that, and I had the opportunity to sign back with Seattle again and just try to prove myself also that I could play again.
We saw you in spring training, and you started out good, and then there were some troubles, and then you accepted the assignment to Tacoma, and you went to work. What happened between then and now?
I think in the beginning of spring training, I was out of shape. It was something normal. And it took me really, I would say, almost 2 months to feel a little better. Just being down there in Tacoma, working with hitting coach down there, Cody, the manager. He really understand, you know, my situation. And just being able to communicate with them, it was a huge part for me. So I just went down there, tried to play, not pretty much every day, but I would say 3 or 4 times a week. It was enough for me to find myself again.
And you've learned that you can hit, too, not playing every day, that the numbers would indicate.
Yeah, I was surprised about it, you know, because when you have a long time out of baseball, sometimes it takes times to get back in shape on hitting-wise, you know. So, but, you know, I think because I wasn't thinking about anything, about, we'll say, not coming back here, but, I mean, I was thinking about it, but I didn't want to put any pressure on me. It was on the back of my mind, but every time when I was playing, I was just focusing on the game, trying to see good pitches, put some good swings on the ball. And that's it.
You've done a lot of great things in baseball already. You didn't have to, you know, put in this battle to do what you're doing right now. It's almost like, you know, when you're first coming up and trying to get into the game, how would you compare getting back into the game to that?
Well, you know, I always say that, you know, in life you have to battle a lot of things. People have some different things to battle through it. And my thing was there, and I had to do it. I didn't want to go back home and see, you know, again, watch baseball from, you know, on the couch, and I just wanted to give it a try again, knowing that obviously I'm not going to be the guy that I used to be before playing on center field, but I'm going to be able to help the team in some other way. So that's why I'm really glad to be here again and just be in the lineup again.
Have you talked to Felix yet today?
Not yet. He's not here yet. I guess he'll be here in a few minutes. But some Felix time. But I guess he's happy to have me here again.
I'm sure he is. We are all thrilled to see you here, Franklin.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
All right. Thank you.
Congratulations to Franklin Gutierrez back with the Mariners. Now we turn our attention to Scott Lindholm. He's been on before. Really enjoy his conversations. As we're going to dive into a few different things. We'll dive into his positions, rankings in terms of shortstops, third baseman, also talk a little Felix. Beyond the Box Score, the place you can find him as well, it's pretty interesting when you see the diagram laid out as well. You can see the plot points and where everyone sits, and when he goes through the explanation, you can see it visualized at the same time. So it's pretty interesting stuff. Well, I'm excited. We get to welcome back one of our favorites here to the show, Scott Lindholm. You can find him on Twitter, at Scott Lindholm, also Beyond the Box Score. And he's writing a fabulous ongoing series and really breaking down position by position, looking at player value, that sort of thing. It's really great stuff. You can find it Beyond the Box Score. Today we're going to focus on the left side of the infield, shortstops and third basemen, two positions, at least offensively, are very, very different at this point. Scott, great to have you back. Certainly appreciate the time. This is going to be fun.
Always a pleasure, Gary. Thank you for having me on.
So let's start, before we get in specifics about each position, let's start about how you go about this. How do you go about putting together the values?
Well, what I do, I started doing this, I did my own blog a couple years ago, and I just started doing little scatter plots. What I did, I discovered that FanGraphs assigns a dollar value to every player, and the dollar value is simply a multiple of their FanGraphs wins above replacement value. So if a play this year in 2015, FanGraphs has assigned a value of about $8 million per point of war. So if a player were to have, say, three war seasons so far this year, he'd be worth $24 million. Well, I thought that was kind of neat, and what I thought was really fun was I would then plot it against what that player was actually making. And so, obviously, this is going to skew well for the younger players still under team control that are under first contracts, they're under early arbitration salaries, players like Brad Miller, who we're going to discuss in a moment, who are only making just over $500,000, but are delivering value in the, well, Brad Miller, by my estimate, or by FanGraphs' estimation, is delivering $11 million worth of value so far this year. So the return on investment there, $11 million for the price of $500,000, not too shabby. And so what I do there then is that way you can actually see, and in the past I've actually put the lines in my graphs. I can't do it in the version I used this year. But that way you can actually see what players are delivering more value and what players are under-delivering. And in general, and I do mean this in general, the younger, lesser-paid players will typically deliver more value than an older player simply because, and an older player who's making more money, it's going to be more difficult for him to generate that amount of value. But it's usually pretty close unless there's some absolute busts. And in the case of the shortstops this year, there's some disappointments, I would say, but I really wouldn't call them busts. But one of the real breakouts this year, and this is one that actually has been sneaking up on me over the last couple of days, has been the play of Brad Miller for the Mariners.
Yes, yeah, it's a fascinating position to look at right now. I've been looking at the leaders and in all sorts of different categories, and it's changed, especially offensively in the past few years. It was a position of power, you know, for a stretch. It's no longer that right now offensively. So where does Brad Miller fit in with some of the shortstops around the American League and around baseball?
Well, let's go ahead and look at offensively first. And if you just look at his numbers purely straight up, 221 batting average, 309 on base, neither of which do anything for me. His weighted runs created plus is 97, 100 is average. That means he's 3% below average, which is essentially a wash. I mean, that means he's average offensively. Seattle fans know this. Other fans don't know it as well. Seattle is where baseball's going to die. It's just not as good of an offensive ballpark as some of the other ballparks are. And so as a result, you may look at those numbers of Brad Miller's and just say, 221 batting average, that's horrible. Six home runs, he should be able to hit more than that. But it's very important to note that he's doing it, playing half his games in a pretty offense-unfriendly environment. Let me throw an example out to you just to compare and contrast. This is Starlin Castro of the Cubs. He's got a 264 batting average. He has a 297 on base, which is horrible, given that you should have about a 70-point gap between your batting average and your on base, especially if you're not a power hitter. He has a weighted runs created plus of 72, which means he's 28% worse than the typical major league player. He plays half his games at Wrigley Field, which is a hitter-friendly park. So what happens is if you just look on the surface and you go, oh, Starlin Castro, he's batting 264. Brad Miller, he's batting 221. And it's not that simple. There's more to it than that. And so that's on the offensive side. So Brad Miller actually is probably doing all right for having to play half of his games in Seattle. Defense is a little trickier. He's average to slightly above average from all the defensive metrics I can see. But he's not bad. So that's the important thing. And like you mentioned at the onset, back in the early 2000s when we would have shortstops that were hitting 25, 30 home runs, that day is over. That's just not going to happen. Defense has now shortstop has now become a defense-first position, and it's almost to the point where if a player can play decent enough defense, the offense, it can't be an afterthought. I don't think it's ever going to reach that point. But you can afford to have a little less offense than maybe even as recently as 10 years or so ago.
It's really interesting to look at. Who are the guys that are getting the most value right now from that position around baseball?
Right now, another surprise, although it really shouldn't be a surprise, number one right now is Brandon Crawford of the Giants. I just thought he was kind of a fluke last year. I just thought he had a lucky World Series. I don't get to see that many Giants games. I figure, oh, good for him. You know, he performed what he needed to perform. But he's continued to perform this year. Johnny Peralta is having another outstanding year, even though he's 33, and he's probably starting to kind of reach that point where you might expect him to drop off. I'll leave reasons why that might not be the case for others to speculate upon. Jose Iglesias is having an excellent year for the Tigers. Again, let's look at his numbers real quick. One home run, 9 RBIs. You look at that, wow, that's not very good. But he's batting .325. So he's doing what he needs to do. He's getting on base. He's letting the other thumpers, and he bats at the bottom of the order anyway. He's getting on base. He's letting Miguel Cabrera and the Martinez's drive him in, and Yoenis Cespedes. So he's doing what he's supposed to do. Danny Echeverria, the Marlins, is sneaking right up there, and that's fairly recent. He hadn't been having a very good year, and then he seems to have gone on a bit of a run lately. And then Xander Bogaerts of the Red Sox appears to be one of the few bright spots. But right in that group, I mean, literally right amongst in that group, if I'm going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, looks like Brad Miller is number 7 or number 8 in terms of Fangraphs wins above replacement level. Top 8, if you're in the top 8, you're in the position just about every team in baseball wants to be in. That's the position called I'm settled. I don't need to worry about it. I'm good. I don't need to go out on the open market. I don't need to make trades. I don't need to give away my young talent. I don't need to do anything like that. I'm in good shape. From what I can see, as of now, assuming that he hasn't been on some hot streak, you know, that is pushing things up in it with a .221 batting average, I'm going to assume that's not the case. I think the Mariners might be in pretty good shape going forward at shortstop.
Let's shift our attention to third base, where I think there is a ton of depth. There's a lot of good young third basemen right now in Major League Baseball. What did you see when you explored that position?
Let me tell you what I see every night when I turn on my TV, and it only takes me 5 or 6 stations to find the Chicago Cubs game. I see a young man by the name of Chris Bryant. I see a young man by the name of Chris Bryant, whom I was led to believe really had no use for a glove because he didn't know how to field. So I'm thinking, well, he better be Babe Ruth, because if he's going to be Miguel Cabrera with the glove, then he's going to need to make up for it offensively. And I have not seen that. I've seen a guy who probably has deficiencies on defense, but he's made some plays. He's not afraid to go after balls. His defense is not going to hurt him. He is not going to be – his defense at third will not be the reason the Cubs have anything other than, say, a one-game failure where he makes an error that allows a winning run to score. And anybody can do that, quite frankly. Having said that, Chris Bryant's long-term future is probably going to end up in left field because the Cubs are just loaded at middle infield. But you look at some of the other ones. I mean, obviously, Josh Donaldson. And even now, he's been overtaken by Todd Frazier in the last couple of days. I've liked Donaldson for a while. I've always been a little worried about him because he's a late bloomer. I mean, he's 29 already, and he's not even he's still under 3 years of team control for Toronto.
Yeah.
You know, he's only reaching arbitration now. So, you know, it's kind of the same thing with Todd Frazier. They're never really going to get the big paydays because they were just a little on the late side. But then you got Bryant. Who else? Oh, Nolan Arenado of the Rockies.
Yes.
Good luck finding out anything about him. That's just not going to happen. But, I mean, he's the equivalent of Chris Bryant, you know, in just about every measure there. And the one that I wrote this because I wrote about the third baseman last Saturday. The one, Manny Machado of the Orioles. This is the one that blows me away because he's still a year younger than Chris Bryant. And yet it feels like Manny has been around forever. Mm-hmm. And I think I put it a little throwaway line at the end so it didn't really burn into my head because I did it at the very end. Right now, the way he's defending, using Fangraphs defensive metrics, if you were to prorate out on a per-inning basis, the best fielder, the best fielding third baseman in baseball history is Brooks Robinson. No real shock there. Manny Machado, if he were to continue on, would actually exceed Brooks Robinson in terms of fielding.
Wow.
That's saying something. Yeah, I mean, I saw that and I just said, oh. You see the numbers, you see the things that say, oh, he's a good defender. When you actually start going a little bit deeper and you see, yeah, he's on a pace to be better than the best defensive third baseman in the history of baseball. Yeah.
Yeah.
That might get your attention.
Yeah, he's having a Seager great isn't, year. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, he's having a great year. And it's a great story, too, because he's been through a couple of now devastating injuries, and it's a nice bounce back. He's a real young player, as you mentioned, and hopefully has a bright future for Baltimore.
Well, and Seager's not quite with that group that I mentioned, but he is not far behind. He is pretty much right there. So I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Seager looks like he's in the 10 to 12 range, something like that. And he's having the same exact season he's had for the last couple of seasons. He's going to hit about 20, 25 home runs, 70 to 80 RBIs. He's going to bat around 260, decent with the glove. And really, what more do you want? And you better like him. He signed through 2022.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they made the decision last year, and I certainly can't second-guess it. I thought it was a good decision at the time. I don't think it's a particularly onerous contract by any means. I mean, he's owed close to $86 million, give or take. So I don't think it's that bad. And assuming nothing unforeseen happens, you know, I think he can be in the Mariners' plans for quite some time. He's only 27, so, I mean, they can count on him easily for the next 5-6 years. So if you think about it, you know, they certainly have second base sewed up one way or the other. Shortstop, in my mind, looks like it's in pretty decent shape. Third base looks like it's in pretty decent shape. Catcher, I'm not sure. I'm not really liking offensively what I'm seeing from Mike Zunino. He appears to be a pretty decent pitch framer. But I don't know if that's enough to overcome a 158 batting average. First base has to be improved. Left field has to be improved. Center field, I don't know what's Austin Jackson. I really don't know what's up with him. Every time I think he's doing all right, he goes on some weird little streak where he doesn't produce or anything like that. I don't know if he's a long-term. Well, he can't be. He's 28 anyway. Right field. You know, at some point, Nelson Cruz is going to have a bad season. This doesn't appear to be that season. if it wasn't for him, I don't even want to think about where the Mariners would be offensively. Even with Nelson Cruz, the Mariners are dead last in the American League in runs scored. They are second to last in base runners. And it's hard to score runs if you don't have base runners. Yeah. And they're second to last in that category. And that's with Nelson Cruz. Let me tell you a couple things about Felix Hernandez that I just realized a couple nights ago while I was just idly thinking about some of this stuff. And I was just thinking of his numbers. I was thinking about what would happen if the Mariners would entertain a trade with the Cubs for Felix Hernandez, you know, what it would take in return and things along the lines like that. And so I was just kind of looking at him in terms of the number of innings he's pitched, because we've talked about this before. You know, Felix is 29 this year, and so right now he has about 2,151 innings pitched in his career so far. So he's going to have over 2,200 innings by the end of this year. And I thought, that seems kind of high for a pitcher that's only 29. I wonder how many other guys have done that. Well, since 1960, it looks like about 12 other pitchers have thrown that many innings by the time they're age 29.
Wow.
When you hear the list of those pitchers, you're going to get a smile across your face for the most part, because you're going to hear people like Fernando Valenzuela. You're going to hear Burt Blyleven, Vida Blue, Joe Coleman, Larry Durker, Ken Holtzman, Catfish Hunter, Don Sutton, Sam McDowell, Milt Pappas, John Drysdale, and Bob Friend.
Huh.
Now, obviously, you've got pitchers that were good enough to be able to pitch at a very young age, at the age of 18 or 19. They were able to stay healthy. They were able to continue to be effective. But then it got me wondering, well, you know, how much did these pitchers have after that age 29 season? And for some of them, it was pretty good. I mean, there's at least four Hall of Famers in there. You got Bly Levin, you got Catfish, you've got Drysdale. And so those guys obviously went on to have a long career. And some of these other guys, they were pretty much finished. Sam McGowell didn't have much left after he hit that after his age 29 season. Same with Larry Durker. Same with Joe Coleman. But the thing is, I don't think that's going to be the problem with Felix Hernandez. He seems to be ageless. And I'm not sure I really understand how that is, but I think for Mariners fans, it's really only important to know that it is, because he seems to be defying almost every type of aging curve that's out there. Or not even, I shouldn't say aging curve, I should say usage curve.
Right.
Because nobody his age has even anywhere close to his number of innings pitched currently pitching in baseball.
I think the biggest thing for him, he's already made the transition from what he was early in his career, the flamethrower, the 97-mile-per-hour guy, and he's already made that transition to where, you know, he's got a lot of weapons. He's got the curve, which is excellent. He still has a good heater, and, you know, he has other pitches to go to, but his changeup is the key. I mean, he's already made that transition to being just a flat, dominant pitcher using the changeup, and I think that can really help his longevity.
Oh, I'm absolutely convinced of that. I think we talked last year almost right at this time. And when we talked at that time, from what I could see looking at Brooks baseball, we were right in the beginning of when he was starting to change his pitching mix from fastball to more of the changeup. It was starting to happen. And at that point, I was saying, you know, is this an anomaly? Is this just 1 month? Well, it's not. He's not using the changeup quite as much as last year, but he's still using it quite a bit. The fastball and the changeup have now effectively caught up to each other. He's using them about the same. Mm. And if you think about that, and this is what we said last year, nothing absolutely has changed. He's still throwing his fastball somewhere in the 94 to 95 range. Now, if you're throwing a changeup at 88, because it's still not quite hitting 90 like it used to, but it's still 88, and that's still ridiculous. You know, if you can still go ahead and throw that kind of changeup and just throw people completely off, I mean, that's just, you're going to be able to fool hitters. You're going to be able to do it with less strain on your arm, and who knows how long you're going to be able to pitch in that case. I mean, you might be able to go for another 10 years and be one of these, the next rubber arm man, you know, that throws for a tremendous number of innings, like a Greg Maddux or somebody like that. Well, nobody's going to be Greg Maddux. There's only one of those. But, you know, he can be one of those power pitchers that doesn't fall apart and can still have a very long career ahead of him.
Which is amazing to think about, because I look now. I mean, he just passed Catfish Hunter on the all-time strikeout list. I mean, he's passing significant players, Hall of Famers, on some of these lists. And I think about, what if he does have another 10 years? Where are his final numbers going to be? I mean, it's amazing to think about.
No, I mean, obviously he's going to have the benefit of having started young, so he'll have an additional 2 or 3 years over a lot of people in order to have amassed some of those counting stats, but still, in no way does that denigrate what he's done. I mean, it's hard for me to find Mariners games. I mean, I can usually only see them whenever they're playing the White Sox. But believe me, when they're playing the White Sox, I'm willing to go through the pain of watching a White Sox game in order to watch Felix pitch, because that is really something else. I watched him last year pitching against the White Sox. I think I told you this, but I'm going to tell you the reaction somebody had. He threw a pitch to Tyler Flowers that completely just froze him up. Flowers really did not know what he was supposed to do. And so he kind of swings the bat. I think he's thinking maybe he'll follow the ball off. Maybe he won't, but at least it's something, you know, which I think is an interesting attitude for a major league hitter to take, the at least I tried attitude. He had zero prayer of hitting that pitch, none whatsoever. Both the White Sox TV men, Steve Stone and Ken Harrelson, said as much, that he didn't have a prayer of hitting that pitch. I'm in a meeting, a Sabre meeting, in last January. I'm meeting up with a couple of other people. And I said, I saw this pitch from Felix Hernandez to Tyler Flowers. And they go, I know that pitch. And they said exactly. They go, yeah, that thing was filthy. They knew the pitch I was talking about. That's the kind of transcendent pitcher that Felix Hernandez is. Other town people like us can see a pitch and it burns into our heads because we can't forget it, because nobody else throws like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it almost leaves me without words to describe what I see it. And I wish I could see a lot more of him because he really is special. The problems for the Mariners this year are not going to be pitching. I mean, as long as you've got Felix and as long as Iwakuma can come back, and he's not getting any younger, I'm going to hold that with a grain of salt until I can actually see that for fact. But if what you're describing is accurate, and I'm sure that it is, then, you know, pitching isn't going to be the issue. But that also gets to the other core issue, something that I've been thinking about quite a bit lately, and that is, you know, we used to always say, man, good pitching, it's just hard to find. Well, I'm starting to become kind of convinced that good hitting is becoming hard to find. I think there's almost more great pitchers than there are great hitters in baseball today. And so when I talk about that hypothetical Felix Hernandez trade, I'm certainly not going to trade an Anthony Rizzo. Forget about Chris Bryant. That's not going to happen. I'll trade Starlin Castro. but I'm just thinking, would I really trade hitting for pitching? Or would I take the other view that I can get my pitching in the off season on the free agent market and I can roll the dice that way and just stockpile the hitting that I have and then just figure that I can get pitching? I'm starting to think that's the case. I mean, in the American League, when you say outstanding hitters, you think Mike Trout, I think Josh Donaldson, and yeah, he's a good hitter. I'm not sure I'm ready to put him in the Valhalla. Obviously Miguel Cabrera. Beyond that, I'm going to have to start digging around a little bit to find who I call. And Nelson Cruz is having a good year. I'm not necessarily ready to say, you know, that that's going to continue going on. And so I don't know where the Mariners are going to find that offense because every other team in baseball is looking for it too.
No, you're right. And for them, it's really the magic four number. Their pitching is good enough that they can just eke out a little bit more at this point. I mean, four runs a ball game would do it and put together probably a nice, consistently put together a nice streak to get them back in the mix.
I think that can work. I mean, like I said, they're worst in scoring. They're really not that bad in runs allowed. They're in the upper half of the American League. They're sixth in the fewest runs allowed by their pitchers, so it's certainly not their fault. But, you know, until they start getting on base and giving somebody for Cano and for Cruz and for Seager to drive in, it's going to be difficult for them to score some runs. And so I don't really necessarily know how you do that. I don't know if firing Lloyd McClendon is the answer. I'm not really a big fire the manager kind of guy anyway. I mean, that's a stop to fans and something that really accomplishes anything, you know, unless, you know, there's like a poisonous atmosphere in the clubhouse, and I don't know anything about that. But, you know, the thing about the American League, though, is that there's really, especially in the West, there's really no team there that just screams out at me and just says, oh, you know, you're not going to get past these guys. The Angels are down. The Astros are doing it with mirrors because when I say that the Mariners were 14th in terms of number of base runners they've had this year, well, the Astros are 15th. Mm. So they've had the fewest base runners in the American League, and yet somehow they're on top of the American League West. Okie dokie. I don't exactly know how that works other than what has to be lights out pitching. That's the only way that can work. But
timely home runs, too. And I don't know how if that can continue to hold up. Their home runs have been very timely.
I mean, I watched the White Sox sweep the Astros. I just don't know if they're for real or not. I just don't. They could be. They very well could be. They could be the Cubs of the American League right now, young and slightly ahead of schedule. You know, I obviously don't watch them with the frequency I watch the Cubs. The Rangers are where I think they should be, but I just don't know how that's going to stand up. I don't know if they've got the pitching to get them through all the way. It's very doable as far as I see it in the American League race. It's very doable to even win the division. And like I said, five or six games gets you back in the wild card discussion. So,
well, Scott, this was great. We should do this again soon and not wait so long next time. What's coming up? What's your next position on BeyondTheBoxScore.com?
Next position will be left field. Nice. And suffice it to say, I'm probably not going to write anything about Dustin Ackley.
Okay.
So that's probably not going to. No, I'll cover a left field, and that will be coming out this upcoming Monday.
Nice. Okay. BeyondTheBoxScore.com. Scott's a great follow, too, at Scott Lindholm. I recommend that highly. Scott, thanks a lot. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you as always, Gary. Have a good day.
See you later!